Chères auditrices et chers auditeurs, bienvenue à Radio Créum. Jan Gehl est un architecte et urbaniste de Copenhague qui est reconnu pour avoir contribué à humaniser les grandes villes, notamment Copenhague et la ville de New York, avec des aménagements favorables aux piétons et aux cyclistes. Le sommet mondial Éco-Cité 2011, tenu à Montréal, a eu la chance de le recevoir, et c'est durant son passage que Jane Engel-Varnick du Centre d'écologie urbaine de Montréal a rencontré Jan Gehl. Cette entrevue est rendue possible grâce aux éditions Éco-Société, que nous remercions, et qui feront bientôt traduire l'important livre de Jan Gehl, Cities for Peoples. Mais avant l'entrevue, pour rester fidèle avec une tradition à Radio Créum, je vous fais connaître les Shellys, un groupe, un petit duo de Los Angeles, et qui est formé par Tom Brosseau et Angela Correa.
If you ever go down to Trinidad, they make you feel so very glad. Calypso sing and make up rhyme, guarantee you one real good fine time. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana. Both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar.
Beat it, man, beat it.
Since the Yankee come to Trinidad, they got the young girls all gone mad. Young girls say they treat 'em nice, make Trinidad like paradise.
Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana. Both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar.
Oh, you vexing me, you do.
From Chickachickory to Mona's Isle, native girls all dance and smile. Help soldiers celebrate his leave, make every day like New Year's Eve.
Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana. Both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar.
Out on Monsenea Beach, GI's romance with Native Beach. All night long make tropic love, next day sit in the hot sun and cool off.
Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana. Both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar.
That's a fact, man, that's a fact.
In old Trinidad, I also fear the situation is mighty queer. Like the Yankee girls, the native swoon when she hear her finger croon.
Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana. Both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar.
I am sitting here with Jan Gehl. Jan is author of Cities for People, and I'm Jane Engel-Warnick with the Montreal Urban Ecology Center. We're here at the EcoCity World Summit 2011. And so what I want to ask you first, Jan, based on what you've seen here so far in Montreal, either on this trip or on other trips, how would you say our city stacks up in terms of being a city for people?
Some years ago, I thought it was very uninteresting, and the fact that all the streets were completely full of cars and they were doing whatever they could to push people underground, that to me was a very, very narrow-minded policy. And I'm happy that this has been, if not abandoned, then at least it has been strongly supplemented by a much better surface city. And I'm very happy to see the extension of various pedestrian areas. I also think that the introduction of the Bixi and the first steps towards a good bicycle system is also visible now, and one could rejoice for what has been done, but certainly urge the Montreal city to keep on and improve and extend the system. I think it still is very embryonic, if that is a word we can use. I will strongly suggest, and I see that also done various places, that bicycle lanes are always made next to the sidewalks, and then the parked cars can park on the outside. And that is a much, much safer way of doing it. And you also shows that you have understood a little bit about what it is to be a bicyclist. And we shall all the time think about the bicyclists from 6 until 85, and not just the male young people who are doing it as an extreme sport.
Right. I love your concept of these plastic bike boxes that go over family bikes in the streets of Copenhagen. It's really a biking culture for all, isn't it?
Yeah, in Copenhagen they have worked on the improving the safety and in extending the invitation for more and more people to bicycle. They have worked on this for 25 years, and already by now every other person in Copenhagen is on his bike every day. Half of everybody, they are on bikes every day. It has also been found that it is, for society, it's a very beneficial mode of transport. It has been found that every time a bicyclist do a stretch of, I think it is about a little bit more than a kilometer or a couple of kilometers, the society gains 60 cents. And if the same stretch is done in a car, the society loses $1.10 or something like that. If all the expenses with these modes of transport are calculated and divided with the number of people doing it.
How would you say, just based on what you know about Montreal, how do we stack up, and what do we need to prioritize in order to become a healthier, safer, sustainable, and livelier city?
I will refrain from answering that question, because I think It's a very valid question, and I think that to answer it, one will have to have the chance to investigate more thoroughly. You have excellent statistics about everything about the traffic in this city, and you probably have very meager statistics or data about how people use the city. That is normally something which cities do not have any systematic knowledge about, so one has to guess. We have found that it is very, very strong medicine to start to record the life in the city in the same systematic and proper way as a traffic engineer always document the traffic situation. Because then if you start to document the life in the city, then you can start to have a public life policy, then you can start to move instead of guess. So I will not answer that question.
One of the things that we often quote you on is you talk about infrastructure in terms of invitation. The way you build sends an invitation to people to behave in a certain way. So would you say that's also true for all kinds of transportation infrastructure? And I ask because you may know that we're in the process of making major decisions about transportation infrastructure right now in Montreal. I'd like to know your concept of that.
Definitely. I mentioned that we have known for 100 years now that if we make more roads, we will have more traffic. And that is, of course, a very obvious invitation. Talking about infrastructure to cars, I think that in 2011, when we know that the end of petroleum, and which we can pay, is really in sight, and that we may drive our last car now, or maybe the second last car, petroleum-driven car now, I would be very reluctant to invest great sums in infrastructure for that mode of transportation, because it may be something which the investment could not be paid back in due time. It would be much, much smarter to take on the next challenge and say, what will happen after in the post-petroleum age? What shall we be ready? And could we be the best in the world to take on the next step? And we may even sell the technology to other cities which are not so smart. So I really think you are in a very interesting situation in Montreal, because you have to renew some of the dilapidated old 1960s infrastructure.
Our view is often that the reason people accept things is because that's what they're used to. And so we see as one of our roles to inform people that we can have another city. We can have the city they want. It's not it's something we should be moving toward. And I love when you also say that since you've been working in Copenhagen for all these decades, that every morning you wake up and you know that the city is a little bit better, because cities are changing all the time, right? They evolve every day. I love to think about that because it also underlines how important it is to have a long-term vision of a better city and to take practical steps on a regular basis. Do what you did in Copenhagen. Take away 2% of parking each year to slowly make the change toward real transformation of the city.
I think that's a very important test. If you can wake up every morning and be reasonably sure that the city which you're waking up to is a little bit better than the city yesterday. I heard about this quite a few years ago in Mexico City. A colleague of mine said, you wouldn't understand really how it is to have 3 children and know that every morning the city is a little bit worse than it was yesterday, and I have to bring up my children here. And how long can I live with the thought of these children growing up in a city which gets worse and worse? And then I thought, oh, we have another situation, and how lucky we are, and how much would I wish that every citizen around the world could say that every morning. And we shall aim hard for something like that.
Let's just do something. Someplace to dance, I know that there's a chance you won't be leaving with me. And afterward we drop into a quiet little place and have a drink or two. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. I can see it in your eyes that you despise the same old lies you heard the night before. And though it's just a line to you, for me it's true, it never seemed so right before. I practice every day to find some clever lines to say to make the meaning come true. But then I think I'll wait until the it's late and I'm alone with you. The timing's right, your perfume fills my head, the stars get red and all the night's so blue. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. Timing's
right, your perfume fills my head. The stars get red and all the nights so blue. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. I love you.